You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the SBS On The Money podcast for this Wednesday, the 28th of January, 2026, a day where the Australian share market fell, the S&P ASX 200 down 0.1%, 8,933. We'll have the details with James Gerrish from Market Partners and a special extended interview with Stephen Miller from GSFM. A lot of that weakness coming through following the inflation figures out today, the headline consumer price index from the ABS rising 1% in December, which means the annual rate climbed to 3.8%. It's been steadily rising since June and is above the RBA's target band of 2 to 3%. The bank's preferred underlying rate of inflation, which strips out one-off variables, also higher at 3.3%. Now, the largest contributor to annual inflation this time around was the housing category, electricity, rents and new dwellings all higher. Higher wages and ingredient costs pushed up meals out and takeaway prices. Beef continue to climb up more than 10% on the year because of strong overseas demand, while lower supplies hit coffee and tea prices up 15% compared with this time last year. And the holiday season, along with the school break and major events like the Ashes Cricket Test Series, bumped up domestic holiday and travel costs. So what does this all mean for the future of prices and for interest rates? For that and more, I spoke with Stephen Wu, an economist at UBS. Stephen, firstly, how would you describe the inflationary environment at the moment?
Yeah, look, Ricardo, I'd say it's uncomfortably hot, to be honest. So we had the inflation numbers today for the month of December. It was 3.8%, and that's simply too high. It's well above the RBA's inflation target. And not just the level, but also the direction of travel is also worrying as well. So rather than inflation coming down, it's now going up. And conceivably, for the January numbers, we could see a 4% for headline inflation. So I don't think the RBA will be quite confident by the latest set of inflation numbers.
Where are these pressures coming from?
Yeah, look, it's a very good question. And I'd say it comes from, you know, different areas of the CPI basket. So one that we're quite familiar with is around housing inflation. You know, rents inflation is about 4%, sort of steady at that kind of elevated pace. New dwelling construction costs are about sort of 3% and rising. So that is adding to pressures in inflation in Australia. You also have as well services, specifically market services inflation, that is quite elevated still. And we know that a key input into market services, these are things like, you know, hairdressers or car repairs, et cetera. You know, a key input into market services is labor costs. And labor cost growth by some measures has been accelerating, you know, around, say, 7%-ish year on year. And that is a very elevated pace of growth for labor costs that we think is now translating across into market services inflation remaining high.
Is there any clarity, though, whether a lot of these pressures are structural or temporary?
Yeah, I'd say, you know, certainly we don't expect to see, you know, a run rate of 4% inflation indefinitely. There's going to be some moderation over time. You know, one area that we could see some sort of improvement is around tradables inflation and sort of imported consumer goods. Obviously, you know, last, say, sort of month or 2 months, we've seen a strong rally in the Australian dollar. It just touched 70 cents as of today after, you know, the stronger inflation data. And that will help contain tradables inflation and also imported goods inflation as well. So that should sort of be less of a concern for the RBA going forward. But, you know, other things, you know, like housing, for instance, market services will take a bit more time, I think, before that begins to ease. But I still think inflation is uncomfortably high and the RBA should be making adjustments to the interest rate path in order to account for this higher path of inflation.
So putting that all into one thought then, does this lock in an interest rate rise next week?
Yeah, so, you know, maybe to borrow a phrase from the RBA governor, I wouldn't lock anything in. But the view here at UBS is that the RBA will be delivering a rate hike next week at their February meeting. There's obviously the inflation data, which, as we touched on, is too high and also moving in the wrong direction. But the broader context is also that the economy has been quite strong. So you look at consumer spending, that has accelerated to above 6%. You look at last week's unemployment report, which showed unemployment down to 4.1% against expectations of a rise. So you're seeing, a strong economy, you're seeing a resilient labor market, and now with higher inflation, I think these three factors, the so-called trifecta, if you want, does point to the RBA delivering a rate hike next week. Now, in terms of what this means for sort of further out, yeah, I think the risk is that they deliver more rather than fewer rate hikes. So we've got two rate hikes in there for this year, but we think the risks do skew to more hikes if the inflation pressure takes longer to come to move away than we currently forecast.
What's interesting, though, is that if we do see a rate rise next week, the RBA will be one of the first global central banks, apart from Japan, to lift interest rates this cycle. Does this mean Australia is facing different inflationary pressures than the rest of the world, or perhaps did the RBA just cut too hard last year?
Yeah, so frankly speaking, inflation here in Australia, 3.8%, whereas it elsewhere, you look at Canada, 2.4, US, 2.7, New Zealand, 3.1. They're all a fair way away from where the inflation rate is in Australia. Now, why is that the case? A couple of reasons. They could be sort of unique to Australia. We know this sort of housing dynamic potentially is unique to Australia. But also, I think it's important to look at, the unemployment rate and the differences there is quite stark. We have a 4.1% unemployment rate. It's above 5% in most other economies that we compare ourselves to. So I think this is just telling you that the economy has been quite resilient and is now growing again after, some rate cuts over 2025 by the RBA. And this tells you that, interest rates where they are probably not restrictive, really. Sorry, not restrictive for conditions. And therefore, we're seeing this acceleration in inflation. We're seeing low unemployment. And therefore, I think it does suggest that if the pressure on inflation in Australia is entrenched, I guess, if you want to say, call it that way.
Okay, so that's Stephen Wu, an economist at UBS. The market reaction now, where the ASX 200 fell 0.1%, the loss is accelerating after the statistics were dropped by the ABS late in the morning. Sectors ended predominantly lower, 9 of the 11 sectors on the index finishing down. Information technology, the worst performing, followed by healthcare and telcos are the two that did well, energy and materials once again. The best performing stock today, Deep Yellow, the uranium producer, up by 10.6%, followed by Silex Systems and Paladin Energy, the worst performers. Some of those tech stocks like Life360 down 7%. Let's take a closer look now at the market reaction with James Gerrish from Market Partners. James, following the inflation figures, to what extent is the market now expecting an interest rate rise next week?
Expectations have shifted a little bit. So before the CPI data, which came out at 11:30 today, it was about a 60% probability of a hike. Now we're sitting at a 72% probability of a hike. So there's about 17 basis points of tightening factored in. I think you look at the headline level of inflation, it was hotter than expected. The RBA's preferred measure, the trim mean, came in at 3.3% year on year, in line with expectations, but it was a tick above the RBA's 3.2% internal forecast. So to me, it probably puts a little bit more pressure on the RBA. I don't think it puts a lot more pressure on them. The Aussie dollar spiked a little bit on the news, but it's pulled back. The market's pulled back on the news down around 40 points from, or 50 odd points from, where it was trading prior to that update. So slight market movements based on the CPI today.
So, if we are seeing expectations for the Reserve Bank to lift interest rates in Australia at the same time the US may be cutting rates, does that change anything for you with the way you invest?
Well, we're seeing it work through the respective currencies. So the Aussie dollar trading above 70, as I said, the US dollar index, US dollar is at 4-year lows versus the basket of its major trading partners. So obviously we're seeing that play through the currency markets. Headwinds for Aussie investors who have got US domiciled assets. So If I look at our, we're an Aussie investor with US exposure. Currency had a couple of percentage point impact, negative impact on our returns only in the past week. So it is something we consider. But overall, I mean, you think about what a lower currency does for the US. It makes their exports more competitive. It makes them more attractive place to invest, cheaper place to invest. So I can understand why President Trump is suggesting he's pretty comfortable with the trend of the US dollar. I don't think it'll mind him one bit that the US dollar is going down as weak versus all major other currencies.
And that weaker US dollar, right? What's that a story of? Because we often talk about the Australian dollar rising. What does it mean for our economy? But that strength in the Aussie, is it more a US weakness story?
They say the Aussie is just a cork floating in the big currency ocean. So it is heavily influenced by what the US dollar does. Obviously, if you look at what drives currencies, it's interest rate differentials. We've had now the expectation or the pricing through the market in any case that the RBA is going to hike rates at a time when the US is going to still forecast to cut rates. That's obviously a tailwind for the Aussie. We've also got ripping commodity prices. So we're a commodity-based economy, commodity currency, and stronger commodity prices obviously flow through into a higher Aussie dollar. And the other thing is around risk sentiment. We're a risk currency. So when risk appetite is high, the Aussie dollar typically does pretty well, and that's what we're seeing at the moment. Markets at all-time highs. So I think it's easy to sit back and understand why the Aussie dollar is trading above 70 cents or around about 70 cents today. What comes next is obviously the key to investors, Ricardo.
I'm keen to get your take on our precious metals. You were talking about commodities earlier. Citi today saying that silver can rally another 40% in the coming weeks to about 150 US. That would be pretty extraordinary given that silver was around 30 this time last year. Are investors getting ahead of themselves, especially at a time where I think there's another silver ETF coming onto the market tomorrow?
Yeah, so I mean, big calls come out after underlying assets have moved. So you often see these big headline grabbing numbers after things have moved. And I'm not 100% sure where silver is going to go. I can understand the flow of money into precious metals on the back of US dollar weakness, debasement of the US currency, concern around the longevity of the US dollar and so forth. To me, I'm more of a contrarian investor, not following the momentum trade. The momentum trade's clearly in precious metals. I would note that we're starting to see some slight underperformance of the local precious metal stock. So, gold is trading, 5,240 an ounce or thereabouts today. Had a really strong night overseas. We're seeing uplift in the gold stocks, but not to the extent that we're seeing in the metals prices today. So, I'm probably going a little bit against the grain here, and saying that it's time to be trimming those exposures rather than adding to them. I'd be really reluctant to go out there and put a big position on silver based on Citi's comments this morning.
Okay. So finally, in addition, what are you telling your clients right now in this economic environment, and where do you see the opportunities for investors?
I think there's a lot of opportunities in the Aussie market because there's been such polarization across the sectors that have been doing well and those areas of the market that haven't been doing so well. Two areas I'd call out. So obviously resources have had a really strong run. We're medium-term bulls on the resources space, but now's the time, in my view, to be trimming back on those exposures. On the other side, we've had sectors that are exposed to higher interest rates, so negatively impacted by higher interest rates, property, defensive utilities, infrastructure, and so forth. They've been sold down on this market pricing or repricing of the outlook for interest rates. So if you go back to 3 months or so last year, we were pricing in interest rate cuts. These stocks were doing well. The market's now pricing interest rate hikes, and these stocks have come right off the boil, sometimes down 20-25% from their recent highs. So I'm going in and fading that weakness, so trimming some out of the hot sectors and looking to fade this expectation or almost market pricing or market consensus that we're going to get a rate increase starting on the third, and then ongoing for a couple this year. I don't, I think the Reserve Bank is going to be more reticent to hike, just as they were reticent to cut last year. So that's the thematic we're playing across portfolios, and that's what we're speaking to clients about, Ricardo.
That's James Gerrish there from Market Partners. And now for more on the macro environment, I spoke with GSFM market strategist Stephen Miller, and I first asked him why so many global markets are trading at or near record highs despite so much global uncertainty.
I think what we're seeing, Ricardo, you're right, there is a lot of uncertainty around and the macro backdrop isn't great. But what we're seeing is some big structural mega trends, principally AI, but not exclusively connected to AI. There's things like defense stocks. There's things like what I call oligopolization, where you get big dominant market leaders doing stuff. You know, think Nvidia, think Meta, think Google, think Uber. There's also the market sort of are salivating, if I can use that word, at the prospect of what might be what I call a highly selective deregulatory agenda from the Trump administration. So those structural effects are sort of overcoming a lot of macro uncertainties and have driven global markets through 2025 higher. Now, it will be an ongoing contest, I think, between those sort of structural mega trends on the one hand and those uncertainties and whether they might manifest themselves in a more, let's call it, awkward macro environment in 2026.
One place we are definitely seeing this uncertainty is in precious metals. We're seeing that super rally, especially over the past few weeks. Can it really continue? And do you know who's actually buying these precious metals? Is it still central banks? Is it instos? Is it retail investors?
I think that's a great question. I think the reason that precious metals are doing well, there's a number of reasons. First of all, you've got the prospect of a politically pliant Fed. You know, President Trump has been very vocal in his criticism of Chairman Powell, and he wants to get interest rates down and he wants to get them down now. Now, whether that's a good idea or not, that's a different question. But markets are thinking if President Trump gets his way and short-term interest rates fall, then the US dollar falls, so the US dollar doesn't look as attractive. Also, the Trump administration is less worried about preserving a strong dollar policy. If anything, it wants to see the US dollar a little bit weaker. Again, whether that's wise or not is a different question. We've got heightened, I would say, geopolitical uncertainty. We've got, you know, we've had Venezuela, we've had Iran, we've had Greenland, we've had the fracturing of the Western alliance. You know, arguably, geopolitical circumstances haven't been this uncertain for many, many decades. So that also sort of, you know, favours gold. So I guess in short, investors are sort of worried about whether the US dollar and indeed US government bonds will continue to be the cornerstone safe asset in a portfolio. And they're more looking to something like gold and other precious metals assume that safe harbour attribute, if you like. I think the other thing is when we get this fracturing of alliances and we get this world dividing into spheres of influence, you know, is it really, are the People's Bank of China really going to want to hold their foreign exchange reserves in US dollars? Will the Reserve Bank of India really want to hold a lot of its foreign exchange reserves in dollars? Will the ECB want to hold a whole lot of their exchange reserves in US dollars? And dare I say it, will the Canadians want to hold a lot of their foreign exchange reserves in US dollars? Now, it's not going to happen overnight, but at the margin, I think central banks and official investors, if you like, are pairing their holdings of US dollars, buying more gold. And I think investors are just starting to move that way. You know, despite all the lines you might see outside of bullion shops, I think the professional institutional investor class is just turning their attention to sort of maybe tweaking their bond holdings down and tweaking their gold holdings up. So I think in the environment in which we're in, gold is a good diversifying asset within a multi-asset portfolio. Now, does that mean you're going to get 50% out of gold in 2026? No. But what it means is if you've got a bit of gold in your portfolio, if the world goes to hell in a handbasket, that part of your portfolio will perform really well and insulate you when other parts of the portfolio might not be doing so well. And I do think that's got longer to play.
We know the US Federal Reserve is meeting. The decision's coming out tomorrow. The RBA's decision on interest rates are expected next week. We saw the inflation numbers come in hotter than expected here. What's your take on interest rate moves over the coming few days and slash weeks?
Well, this is my take. My take is this. I think the Federal Reserve will stand pat. I think the US economy, notwithstanding a number of headwinds, has actually done quite well. Activity growth has been very, very resilient, largely reflecting those structural factors that I spoke of earlier. And inflation, yeah, it probably hasn't been as bad as feared, but it's still been a bit sticky. So if you look at that and you say, well, I've got growth that's okay, I've got inflation that's, it's maybe not as bad as I'd feared, but it's still sticky. And I think the Federal Reserve will go, look, I think we can afford to stand pat on this one, look at the data, and wait till our next meeting before we decide whether a rate cut is warranted or not. Now, of course, that won't appease Donald Trump, but that's Jerome Powell's problem, not mine. When it comes to Australia, I think it's now likely that the RBA will increase rates at its meeting next week. I think the inflation miss is too big to ignore, and I think it might be a case, and I think this is how the RBA will present it. It might be a case of a stitch in time saves nine. In other words, by acting now and cutting off inflation at the pass, as it were, we can make sure that we're not caught later on in a position whereby we have to raise rates aggressively because, as the expression goes, the inflation genie gets out of the bottle. And I think that'll get the RBA board across the line for a rate cut when it meets next week.
And final question, because I can just see the headlines if that does happen next week, because a rate rise will mean that the RBA becomes one of the first global central banks
Of course.
this cycle outside of Japan to lift interest rates. So does that mean that Australia is facing, I guess, a different inflationary pressure than the rest of the world? Or perhaps did the RBA cut too hard last year?
I think with the benefit of hindsight, maybe the RBA would probably like to have taken back one of those rate cuts last year. Now, I'm saying that with the benefit of hindsight, right? I certainly didn't express that view last year. So, I want to be sort of open and honest about that. I do think there's something to your question, though, about whether Australia has some inflation proclivity that is greater than elsewhere at the moment. And I think that comes from a couple of places. One is that the fiscal policy, it's not profligate, but it's a long way from being disciplined. And I don't just mean at the federal level, I mean at the state level as well. And I think the other thing is perhaps since the Hawke Keating government and maybe a bit of the Howard government, governments of both political persuasions and both federal and state have averted their eyes to any meaningful structural reform. And that means, in distinction, say, to the United States, we've had a relatively poor productivity performance, which means unit labour cost growth has been around, let's say, 5%. And it's very difficult to reconcile that unit labour cost growth of 5% with the achievement of the RBA target or the midpoint of the RBA target of 2 to 3%. So the answer to your question is fiscal policy hasn't helped, and there's some structural reforms that have sort of or any attempt at structural reform is withered on the vine, leading to poor productivity growth, leading to higher unit labour costs, meaning that the Reserve Bank's job in keeping inflation or getting inflation to the middle of the target band is accordingly higher, and that interest rates will therefore need to be accordingly higher. Now, bear in mind, the news isn't all bad. The Reserve Bank can afford to increase rates because the unemployment rate is at 4.1%. So, in part, the RBA will need to raise rates because the labour market is in a better position. But part of the labour market being in, and so it's easier to get a job. Part of the labour market being in a better position, though, is higher inflation. So, you know, depending on how you look at it, it can be a glass half empty or a glass half full. If you're a mortgagee, it's a glass half empty. If you're looking for a job at the moment, it's a glass half full.
That's Stephen Miller there, market strategist at GSFM, and he wraps up the podcast for this Thursday. If you enjoy it, give it a rating or review. No, it's Wednesday. It's Wednesday. Give it a rating or review on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Click subscribe, and I will see you tomorrow, Thursday. Bye.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. Content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.